Good morning. I want to welcome you all here today, and thank you for being intrepid. At 7:30, when it started to pour cats and dogs, I had a moment of extreme panic, so thank you for still coming. For those of you I haven't met before, my name is Jennifer Phillips, and I'm the Community Participation Coordinator with the town, so you've probably gotten lots of emails from me over the last several months. And so I think this is going to be a really great day. We're going to be talking to you about a lot of topics that really support the boards and help to make them work well and function well. And we're so excited that you're here to engage with us and share what you've already been experiencing. So without further ado, I will turn it over to our mayor, Mayor Kleinschmidt, and he's going to talk to you a little bit about our government structure. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Good morning, everyone. Delighted to be here. This is one of the things I really look forward to every year now that we've made sure that board and commission member training is an important part of making sure that the entirety of government is actually operating in the way that citizens want it to. Trying to make sure that we all have clear goals and mission for our boards and commissions, and that the volunteers, all of you, have some sense of clarity around what your job is. It can be really frustrating whenever you're giving up your own time to your community and you lack clarity about what it is you're supposed to do or what people are expecting you to do. Because there's one thing that I think everyone always realizes is that, you know, the hopes and dreams, the visions of the community, they're all given to you to handle. And it can be kind of a scary place to be, because decisions that we make together will define not only the way we live today, but how we're going to live in the future, what our community is going to look like, how our systems are going to operate. Are they going to be handled smoothly? Are they going to just continue to present more challenges in the future? And we also struggle sometimes when there's lack of clarity around mission and goals and understanding our tasks. We often have difficulty in just making decisions, because when we approach a project where different decision makers have different goals or different ideas of what a vision is supposed to be, it can lead to often unnecessary conflict even in making decisions. And so we hope that we can all kind of start on the same page and agree and achieve some consensus on at least how we're going to make decisions and how we're going to work together, hopefully with the same goal of being able to produce a great product for our community. That product, our town, and maintaining it and securing it as the greatest town in America. We do things here in Chapel Hill in a similar way that meant to many other communities. Sometimes because we see it work well in other towns, sometimes because we have to and we have no choice, because the state tells us how to do certain things a certain way. But on the edges, we have a lot of options, and we can do things and have processes that meet our particular needs and the needs of our community and its people. And it's there on the edges that what we're hoping we're doing is creating a process that is well-defined for what our particular, what the needs of our particular community. So Jennifer's asked me just to talk generally about how local government works. And I know we're all grown-ups. We've all been to high school. I used to be a high school teacher. I taught civics, and one of the things that I used to teach was a unit on local government, and we talked about the different forms of local government. If you're not from Chapel Hill, or particularly if you're not from North Carolina, and if you're new to this process of serving on advisory board, you may have a completely different idea of how local government works than the way it really does in North Carolina. If you're from New York, for example, and let's say you were there, even if you just moved here yesterday. Mayor de Blasio, the new mayor in New York, is a very powerful person in his city. He's kind of like the king of New York. And, you know, Bloomberg acted like it. but the truth is, the mayors of cities like New York and Chicago are really kind of like the kings of their cities. There's a lot of power that is placed in the office of the mayor. And then they have legislative bodies, city councils, that kind of work like little mini congresses. And they're much bigger than the council that we have here in Chapel Hill. Hundreds of people in New York and in cities like Chicago represent the interests of the community in this legislative body on the council. And then the executive power is all in the hands of an individual. In those cities, the laws are made by a legislature, just the council, just like they are in Congress or our state legislature, and then they're implemented or executed by a mayor. And in those cities, the mayor has the ability to hire and fire all of the employees who work for the town. The police chiefs and the planning directors and all those folks answer directly to a mayor, which puts them in kind of a, I don't know, maybe position that a lot of our staff might not ever want to be in, because it puts them at risk of, well, having to shift with political change, you know, and the political winds. I'm sure there are a lot of employees in the city of New York who were really nervous about the last election, because there were very different views about how that city should move forward that were being spoken of during the campaigns. And some of them probably don't work for the city of New York anymore because one particular person was elected. Well, that's only one way in which a city can operate, kind of like the federal government on a small scale. That's not how Chapel Hill operates. In fact, that's not how any city in North Carolina works. Back in the early 20th century, there was a reform movement that that ran across the country, where what they tried to do was remove politics from the way cities work. Not from policymaking, but just from the day-to-day operations. For example, I think we probably could all agree, unless you're from Chicago, that a sanitation worker shouldn't have to depend upon an outcome of an election to know whether he's going to work tomorrow, right? I mean, I think, and so back in the early 20th century, there became a movement to change the way government works so that people who are good at their jobs, the professional jobs that cities need to have operating in them, could feel secure from the changes in the political winds. And so this a new form of government was conceived of, and it's the council manager form of government. And that's what we employ here in North Carolina, in every city in the state. Even Charlotte and Raleigh have council manager forms of government. In that situation, we have a much smaller legislative body. Chapel Hill, we have 9 council members. I happen to be the mayor, but I am a council member and a mayor. I'm not Rahm Emanuel. I'm certainly not de Blasio. I am one of 9 members who sit on a legislative body, the council. And we together make the policies for the town. But we don't hire and fire or prescribe exactly how sanitation is handled. We don't decide that your trash is going to get picked up on Monday or Tuesday. That operational side does not come to the council. De Blasio could change the day the trash got picked up. I can't do that. In that way, we work very differently. So the council itself is charged with making policy for our town, and rather than operations. And the biggest way, and the grandest kind of policy that the council creates and tries to implement is the comprehensive plan for the community, its vision statement, its mission for the town. And many of you, I think, probably got involved with local government or are here today and wanted to be a part of a board or a commission because you were involved in our last comprehensive planning process, right? Everybody here with a 2020 volunteer participant? Yes, of course. That was a whole rethinking of what our town was going to look like and how we might operate moving into the future. Back in 2010, our town, that many people thought was recession-proof, felt the pains of the national economic crisis much more harshly than we had in the past. It was a much more challenging time for us than recessions had been previously. Back in the olden days, when Chapel Hill was much more of an isolated community. Like, I don't know, back in, I remember in 1986 as a high school sophomore, driving up to Chapel Hill to look at the university and having to get on US 70 from Goldsboro and then get on NC 54 and take this two-lane road out into the, you know, into the countryside and ended up in Chapel Hill. Back then, Chapel Hill felt a long way from Raleigh. I know when, because when we got to Raleigh that morning, it still felt like we had another eternity before we got to Chapel Hill. Today, people live in Chapel Hill and commute there, and they don't even think about the distance between Chapel Hill and Raleigh. We're integrated not just through transit and highways, but through the way that we think of ourselves as a triangle. Because of that, the people in our community have changed. Who lives here are different than they were back in the 80s and before. There was really only one game in town, 1986 and earlier. That was UNC. Everybody was connected to it. Either you were going to school there, or you worked at the university, or you somehow provided some ancillary business that supported the people who worked there or went to school there. And there was very little else going on in town economically. Today, we are much more integrated into the regional economy, and because of that, the national economy. As you know, many of you have heard, the Raleigh-Durham-Chapel Hill, the triangle, is one of the fastest growing areas of the country. We are part of a metropolis that has now more than 2 million people. More than a million of them now live in just Wake County alone. And people continue to come to our region. Even if Chapel Hill accepts zero new people in it, the fact that Durham and Raleigh are going to be receiving a lot more, it's going to affect us and the way we live. If for no other reason, then people are going to want to live here and work there just as they do today. And we have to be responsive to that. Sometimes if we work hard, we can be in front of those changes. And we can prepare for how we're going to respond to those changes. Sometimes, like with national economic crises, we have to respond to them. Instead of being proactive, we have to react. And what we hopefully, I think one of the messages I got from 2020 and the work that you all did was that, you know, let's try to get ahead as much as we can. Let's get ahead of the possibilities and try to realize, you know, a vision for our community that recognizes its new place, understands not being an isolated island, but still can retain and hold on to a specialness. I think we've been successful at doing that largely. In our existence, but it's at risk, and it will be a challenge to continue to do that in the future. So 2020 established some big ideas for our town, and at the end of the day, we had six major themes. You all remember those themes? Actually, if you have the council goals in front of you, you see these little symbols along the side. Those, I hope, are becoming much more familiar to you. The comprehensive plan created and consolidated and organized the work of our community around these six different ideas, creating a place for everyone. Our town and gown collaboration, recognizing that extraordinary asset we have, facilitating people moving around our town, and that means roads and buses and trains, developing good places and new spaces, making sure that the places that we love stay lovable, and that new places that we build have a similar kind of connection to our interests. Nurturing our community, we talk about that in the comprehensive plan as around sustainability and how we remain resilient to the needs in the future. And economic prosperity. Our town had been, in many people's minds, recession-proof. We know we're not anymore, because we just experienced it. And how are we going to prepare for that into the future? Our last comprehensive plan wasn't this comprehensive. In the old, back before this comprehensive plan, comprehensive plans in Chapel Hill were done in a more traditional comprehensive plan way, where we asked the planning board and the council, and maybe we would seat a community committee or an ad hoc board to guide a process for creating a comprehensive plan. Those old plans just talked about development largely. Ours had a lot in it around sustainability, environmental protection, but it was about how things on the ground, bricks and mortar largely, were going to change, and how soft things on the ground, trees, earth, water, were going to be protected. We did that in our new comprehensive plan, but we made it even more comprehensive than just those things. We, the council and the community, said to ourselves, we have a system of operations that needs to be fully integrated. We recognize that the quality of our police department has a huge impact on our quality of life, right? Not just what design standards we're going to put into a building, but also our police department. We realized that when we talk about our need for sustainability and being resilient around the economic changes and climate change and other kinds of issues that could be facing us, that our solid waste and public works policies are important. And those need to be integrated into how we think of ourselves moving into the future. It's not just our planning department document any longer. We have a comprehensive plan that provides direction for every aspect of the way our town operates, and at least the way our employees see their vision. And with this process going into our new boards and commissions that we sat this summer, we're hoping to take those same themes and place them into the work that we're doing as members of boards and commissions. Already, the council has changed the way it looks at the budget. We've said to ourselves, we have these six major themes. Well, why? And these are our goals. Well, what's the, you know, we have a comprehensive plan. That's our goal, right? That's the sum of our goals. But when you ask yourself the question, what is probably the best articulation of a community's specific actions and how it's planning on accomplishing its goals? What is that? It's budget, right? Where is it going to spend its money? So last year we said, you know what, we have these themes. We're going to budget around this as well. We're going to we want our budget to reflect the community's goals. So we have a comprehensive plan. We extract these goals. It's now manifested itself in the way our budget operates and is crafted. It's also changed the way our staff, the people who work for the town, are organized. Just outside this room, right down the hall, is a new permit and inspection center. It exists because it is more in line with the comprehensive plan and these themes than the old silo department theory that we used to operate under. We knew that if we were going to create a place for everyone, that if we were going to develop good spaces and new spaces, that our inspections and our permitting processes had to come together and operate differently. And we looked around the country, we saw how other best practices operated, and we brought those functions together and created a customer service area too for the people who need those services. Those of us who aren't in the development community, right? We come to town hall. We think we come a lot because we go to a lot of meetings. But you know who comes here the most? People who access those services. They're here almost every day. People come in, they have permits, they have questions, they have plans that need to be approved, they have to check them against regulations, and they need people to respond to them easily and quickly. Before this summer, if you're in that business, you came in the front door and you either went up the stairs or up the elevator and you went through a rabbit warren to find the person you needed, and then they gave you a piece of information, and you carried that piece of information down through the rabbit warren to another place where they gave you a piece of information. Then you maybe went down the elevator and across the hall and did something else. No more of that. Because if we have a vision of how our community is going to be operating, if we want to facilitate the development of good places, new spaces, we shouldn't be creating obstacles like that to actually accomplish what our vision is. So that's just an example of how within the operation of the town, you see these themes manifesting. Now this summer, over the last year, we created new boards and commissions. Some old boards and commissions have sunsetted. Some have been integrated into each other, and now some of you are part of newly combined boards and commissions. And the idea there is that that the work that you're doing on your boards are going to be are going to reflect the themes that the community created for itself in the comprehensive plan, just like the way the town operates internally, the way the council sets its goals, the way we handle our budget. And so that citizens, when they come engage with you in a board or commission meeting or with the council, can see connections between the work they did in the 2020 process and how, and not only what they want to have accomplished, but how they're also going to get there, so that we can try to lay out that path as clear as possible. Before, you needed breadcrumbs to get around town hall to get work done. Now what we're trying to do is create clearer paths to what the community says they want our town to be. Now, I don't think for one second that this is exactly what we need. This is an attempt to try to meet that goal. There's a lot of work that's going to need to continue in order to refine it and help keep that path open. You know, even if you go clear a path in your backyard, and I live in this really wooded lot, right? If I went out and cleared a path in the backyard, I'd have to continue to go out there every couple months to keep it clear, right? Things tend to grow, paths become obscured. We need you in the work that you're doing in your boards and commissions to help us keep those paths clear. And if the path seems to be veering off in one direction or another where we don't want it to go, we need your help in steering it and back towards the primary objective, which is helping us get to our full mission. So there's kind of like how our town is operating, and maybe a little differently than it was just last spring. Hopefully you're going to see within the charges that your boards and commissions have, you're going to see this change reflected. Last summer, members of our community got together to rewrite several board and commission charges. Over the course of the next year, several others are going to be rewritten with your help. Again, to try to focus the work in the direction of the comprehensive plan. Okay, so with that kind of as the backdrop of where we are, I want to just go over some basic fundamental stuff around how our local government works. And in a lot of ways, it's the same as any other local government. And as you all know, the town is a creature of the state of North Carolina. And unlike San Francisco, let's say, which is kind of like this independent city almost, we can't do just anything we want. We can't pass laws about just anything we want. We can't regulate things in just any way we want to. The town of Chapel Hill itself, you and me, have limited authority in what we can do in our communities. And so sometimes when we were looking at how we're going to get to our big ideas and how we're going to realize this comprehensive plan, sometimes it seems as if there's a really easy direct route. Why don't we just go that way? So often I just really wish we could just cut through the crap and go straight there. But you know, there have been obstacles placed in our path between here and where we want to go. And one of them is the authority limitations that we have as a community. We can't just cut straight through everything in many cases. And being an official, which you are, you're now a public, you know, if you're a new member, welcome to the world of public official. You have limits in what you can do. And as you're doing your work in your boards and commissions and you hear the community come and ask for specific things, part of being able to help the community achieve what they want is to know where those obstacles are and develop routes around them. And one of them is the limits on our authority. We can only do what the General Assembly says we can do. That's it. We had a good lesson on that with our towing our towing policies over the last couple of years, right? So the legislature gave us power that we didn't have before back in the early 2000s to regulate towing. And so we're like, okay, fine, we're going to go regulate some towing. So we did, and then we thought, well, we need to regulate it some more. And we did some more. And then we did some more. And then finally, one of the towing companies says, you know what, I think you've gone too far. And we're like, no, we didn't. We have the power to regulate towing. So he took us to court. And while it remains true that we do have power to regulate towing, we don't have quite as much as we thought we did. So, for example, we can't just set a cap on how much towing companies that towing from private lots. We can't set a cap on the fee. Can't do it. It doesn't matter how many emails we all get from people who get their cars towed from Panera, who are charged $400 to get it back. There's nothing we can do to make it $200. None. So we're going to keep getting those emails, and I'm really sorry, but you know, maybe we just shouldn't park there and walk away. But you know, nonetheless, not everybody knows that. So you know, one thing we can do, and what the council just recently did, is modify some of its signage ordinances. So we're going to try to just make sure people are aware of what these policies, what our limits are, so that perhaps we can all avoid that rock in the river and not go aground. So we have these visions that are tempered with our limited authority. The council then develops its the policies out of that. We manifest them through ordinances like signs for towing, again, limited with our authority. And then the town manager carries out the day-to-day functions of those ordinances and policies. You, as members of boards and commissions, the council needs your help in developing those policies that come out of the comprehensive plan. That is largely one of your biggest roles. Help us figure out the policies that are necessary in order to achieve the good places, new spaces. You need to help us develop the policies necessary to achieve a system of getting around, roads, greenways, bike paths. How wide should they be? Now, you know, there's a big controversy now, 4 or 5 feet. We have wide outside lanes or bike lanes. How are we going to move people around on our transit system? Should there be a transit line that goes to at least at a minimum where every public housing development is? I think so. Do we have that? No. Did you know that? Do we have public housing developments here in Chapel Hill that there's no bus line that goes near it? Yeah. I can't make that change because I'm not Bill de Blasio. But I think that Eastwood Public Housing deserves a bus line. I can't do that by myself. I need you. Our community said we have a vision for getting around, right? And in that vision, we talk about how getting around and affordable housing come together. That the cost of transporting yourself and moving from work to home and shopping and that kind of thing plays a role in how affordable your living is and what your living standards are. We have public housing, largely driven by our community's interest in affordable housing. Shouldn't the transit engage with that? I need our transit board, our getting around board, to help me make sure that we have a policy in place that provides for transit lines to go by every public housing development at a minimum. That's what they should do. I'm not Bill de Blasio, can't do it myself. I need you to help me craft that policy. Then the council can direct the staff to implement it. Now, it's not just so because we say so. It can only be so if we can then align it with how we spend our money and make sure that that is reflected in our budgets. It can only happen if you spend the time to solicit and respond to community feedback and interests, and that you report to the council and make a recommendation on a change in our policy and ensure that it's reflected in the important documents that can make it happen. There's a lot of work to do that. I hope who's on our Getting Around Transit Board? I really would love it if you had that as a goal. But I'm not Rahm Emanuel. I can't make it happen. We need you. We need you to do that. I would like that to happen. So helping us do those policies is one important role that many of the boards have. There's another role that several of you have because of the particular boards you're on. If you're on one of the newly created development review boards, you have an additional responsibility, not just helping us craft the policies to make these themes come alive and real, but to then actually comment on and review development projects. Now, this is a very, it's kind of a weird place to be. If you're not a lawyer particularly, or you're not a court reporter or a clerk in a courtroom or, you know, engaged with the legal system, it can be a really odd place to be when you're in a board or when you're on a board or a commission who is part of a development review process. Because in many ways, it's kind of like a court proceeding that drags out over the course of many months and sometimes years with several different judges. And if you're on one of these development review boards, you are kind of like a judge in a courtroom that's one part of a large legal process, a quasi-judicial process. It's even called that, quasi-judicial. See, you're judges, we're judges when we're doing that stuff around development review. And you're going to have special roles that you have to play in those situations. And later, Jennifer's going to talk about how the quasi-judicial system works. Many of you, I know, are already familiar with it. But there are certain things that you just have to know going in. If you can remember that you are now public officials, that can carry you a long way. By being a public official, you have responsibilities. Not only to, among them, of course, to listen, be responsive, but also to follow the law in the way that the General Assembly hands it down to us. For one thing, you have to vote. You can't get squeamish when a development project comes to you and you're like, I don't know, I don't want to make up my mind, I'm just gonna recuse myself, or not recuse, I'm just gonna abstain, right? I don't feel good about this, Mr. Chair, I don't know what's right or wrong. And you don't get to do that. You applied for and you're appointed one of these boards so that you could vote. We need your recommendation. And that means you have to go through that struggle of listening to the community and balancing the interests that are put in front of you and coming up with the best decision you can make. It means talking with your colleagues on the board to try your best to come up with a thoughtful recommendation. And, you know, as much as possible, you know, I mean, consensus is best, but you also, consensus can be the biggest enemy of progress. So you have to figure out when that becomes true and when it's not, when to keep struggling for consensus and when to say, you know what, we need to move on this forward. There's no right answer to when that moment is. You'll have to discover it yourself, and you don't get to weasel out of it. You also have to be thoughtful around in engaging with those who have other interests. The development review process, in many cases, in most cases, is going to be without a whole lot of conflict. Now, you might not think that if you read the newspapers, because the newspapers only write stories about development review processes that have conflict, because that's what gets people to take the paper and clip the coupons. Most of the time, it's going to be fairly straightforward, and it's going to be without a lot of controversy. But on several occasions of the kind you've read about and heard about in the community, there's going to be a great deal of conflict. And it's going to be uncomfortable when you're sitting up here listening to the community and to an applicant. And you're going to see people treat each other poorly. It's just going to happen. When conflict occurs, sometimes people want to respond with just emotions, and they behave in ways that they would never otherwise, except that they're in a fight right now. And you're going to have to not only understand that that might happen, but also help them come down from those emotional heights. Sometimes you can be successful, sometimes you're not. But I think it's our responsibility as public officials who engage and help resolve difficult issues to do our best to help people come down. And that means you have to acknowledge the position and the interests that they're bringing to the table. Know that they're, and know that they're sincerely held. People rarely get so upset that they scream and yell and treat each other poorly because they don't sincerely hold these beliefs. They almost invariably always do. And we need to respect that part of those individuals. But we also know that conflict, well, a resolution isn't necessarily going to always bring everyone together. And you're going to have to make difficult decisions in making recommendations that are going to be contrary to the interests as they are at least expressed by somebody who's standing at the podium. It's a tough thing to do. But the council needs you to do it. We need your recommendation on these projects, your thoughtful consideration of the competing interests. That's what you're here for. That's what you said you wanted to do. That's what you signed up for. And that's what our expectation is. When you provide us a recommendation, you need to know, too, that it's going to be just one of several that we're going to get. In our development review process, all of our development review boards are going to funnel into our planning commission. The planning commission is always going to be the last board to provide a recommendation. But just if your board's recommendation is different from the planning commission's recommendation, it's okay. But what the planning commission is going to try to do is resolve some of the conflicts that come from the different boards and then make a recommendation to the council. If your board's recommendation ends up on the low end of the high end of the weighing by the commission, don't fret. Participate. Come and talk to the council. Let us know why you think the commission, the planning commission, maybe should have given greater weight to one side or to another. You are, as members of our, as volunteers in this process, you will have a, particularly if you're representing your board as the chair or the designee at a particular meeting, you will have a priority place in the speaking queue in these review projects, right? So if you come to a board, to a council meeting where a decision and a recommendation is being considered, you're representing the sustainability, the Environmental Sustainability Board, you will have a privileged place in that queue. You will speak first, and as will other representatives of the boards or commissions. And we do that to encourage you to come and to explain your position to the community. And we want you to do it first so that the others who are there to comment can also have a full understanding of what your recommendation was. We don't want people to come up and who may misunderstand your board's recommendation and lambast it and throw out, I don't know, horrible attacks on you or something if they haven't, you know, before they have a chance to actually hear what you had to say. So I'm going to try to set you up so that you can, you're in a comfortable place and that you're not going to have to play defense when you come to the council. But please know you're all going to be welcome in your official capacity representing the board. Once something comes out of the commission and comes to the council, though, know that that is it's still just a recommendation. If there would be no need for the council if the recommendation became the ruling, right? The council gets its advice from this defined system of boards and commissions, but it also gets it from a thousand other places. We set up this system to try to provide for a refined, thoughtful process to get to a recommendation, but nonetheless, there's still going to be a thousand other things that are coming at the council trying to influence the ultimate decision. If your board's decision isn't adopted as the policy, try to contextualize it, okay? Because not only is the council listening to you, but they're listening to these other interests as well. There are some of you whose decisions are the last word, right? Who in here is on a board of last resort? Got an adjustment, board of adjusted people, planning commission, you're a board of last resort. CDC in some ways, you're a board of last resort. For some, the HDC, we have HDC people in here, Historic District Commission, you're board of last resort. Lucky you guys, because you get to feel exactly the way the council does for many decisions. So some of you are actually, you're done, which really underscores how important it is to be careful and thoughtful with your decisions. There's no appeal to the council from the from a board of adjustment decision. If somebody wants a variance and you deny it, they're not coming to me and Sally and Matt and Ed and Jim. No, you're done. They're done. You're the bad guy. Congratulations. So if you know you're in that place, you know, really, the council's hopeful that you're going to be really thoughtful. Let's see, and you'll hear from your boards and from the staff exactly how and those systems will work. Let's see, I just have a couple more things. As board members, and commissioners, I've already talked about some of your obligations. You do have a few other things, like you're right, you have to vote. You don't have a right to vote, you have an obligation to vote. You know that. You have to... You have to follow the same ethical expectations as the council, which basically you can't have a conflict of interest involved in the decision you're making, and that interest is defined as financial. Okay. Also, you have to comply with open meetings laws. Jennifer's going to talk to you a little bit more about open meetings. But if there are 9 members of your board or commission, 5 of you cannot get together at Cafe Driotti and talk about the agenda and what you're going to do tonight. If you do that, you're violating the law. Not the council's law, state law. Right? You cannot do that. Don't do it. I mean, we've seen people try to do it. We have to, like, run interference. If you can get together with your friend on your board, you can talk about things and, you know, I don't know about this. I need more information about that. Well, let's ask for it and see what we can do before a meeting. That's great. But if you have a majority of your board sitting at the coffee shop talking about what you're going to do, it doesn't really matter whether it's a quasi-judicial matter or not. You're really undermining the whole point of this whole process, right? Which is to have the work of the government being done out in the open and having people have an opportunity to come and provide you information. And you're really limiting yourself and handicapping yourself because, I mean, who in here believes they know everything there is to know about every issue that's going to come before them over the next year? No hands go up. You can't. You know, I mean, you're here because you're a committed community member. You love this town as much as anyone does. None of us knows everything we need to know to make every decision that's coming before us. We need the community to come and help us with those decisions. So don't violate the open meetings laws. I've talked about the conflicts that might occur. We need to help bring people around. We've seen over the last several years, actually it's probably been true forever, sometimes there's board dysfunctions that occur. Yeah. It happens. Sometimes boards can be like little reality TV shows, you know? You have all these different people with these different personalities, and, you know, the council kind of, why didn't the council pick people with 9 different perspectives? Well, just speaking that question gives you the answer, right? But nonetheless, it can be challenging for you. There you are, having to come to a meeting every month with people who are have diametrically opposed views of the world, and you're supposed to work things out. Remember, though, that the reason that person's there is because they volunteered to be because they love this community as much as you do. We can remember that. It goes a long way to helping overcome board dysfunction. None of you are being paid to do this. Even that person who sits on the other end of the dais from you, who you're always voting the opposite to, loves this town as much as you do. And that's true about every member of the council and everyone who arranges to get a babysitter or changes their work schedule or has to arrange for a ride because the buses aren't going, you know, at night where they need to go home, to come and talk to you. Every single one of them loves this town as much as you do. And that means we have to treat them professionally, respectfully. Every time you get angry, because you will, but every time you get frustrated, and I know you will, just try to go to that place. That's what I try to do. Loves the town as much as I do. She loves the town as much as I do. We're all in this together. And I think that'll take you a long way. The council is so grateful for the work that you do. We try to reflect that in just even having things like this. We didn't used to have trainings of any kind for board and commission members. Try to have breakfasts and other things throughout the year to help you know how much we appreciate you. But we really do. And we couldn't do the work that we need to do without your recommendations and your advice. And, you know, to close up before I take any questions, I want to take this opportunity like I do every time to make sure you know how much and how grateful we are for the time that you've given, that you're going to give, all those babysitting hours, the transportation issues, the meals you're going to miss, hopefully no anniversaries or birthdays. We want you to come to all the meetings, but I know sometimes some things are just more important. We know that too. But thank you very much for coming here on a Saturday morning and for all the hours I know you're going to give throughout the next year. Now, I'd love to, I have a few minutes that I can answer any questions about anything. Maybe there's something you expected me to talk about that I didn't. And I'd be happy to do that.
So let me just jump in and say, I forgot to say this when we started, but if you've got a question, if you come to this podium and ask it, because we're recording today, and if you ask your question from the audience, we won't be able to hear you, and then it just looks very awkward because the mayor is, like, responding to someone and no one knows what the question is. So if you don't mind coming up here to ask your question, if we do have a line, there's a piece of tape on the floor. If you could just stand behind that so that you're not on camera while the other person. Thank you.
Do you have any questions? Okay, well, I'm going to be here. Yes, Lauren. Somebody with a long history of volunteerism in our community.
Thanks for the quick civics question. Just for background for myself and everyone, what are the second tier of boards which are being in the process of remodeled, and how does that impact the other boards?
Oh, that's a good question. So, as you all know, what Lauren's asking for, just in case anybody didn't hear, is like, you know, we did our restructuring of the development review boards first. The other boards and commissions are also going through an analysis of how they align with the council's, not with the community's comprehensive plan, and whether or not some of them need to be refocused or realigned. You know, sometimes those trails get overgrown. We got to go through and clear them. We need your help in doing that. So over the course of the next year, we're going to be talking to the community, but also to you who serve on those boards and commissions to help do that refining work. And how it integrates ultimately with the newly constituted boards and commissions, I think it's still kind of an open question, because the answer to what is going to be the charge of any of those boards, how is it going to be refined, is still open. We want there to be, you know, so the default is they're all going to move forward as they were last year. But with your help, we're going to do the refining work, and we're going to have to just see. I know that might not be satisfying. Jennifer's presentation and the other presentations this morning may be able to offer a little more insight into how that's going to progress in the future. So I'm sorry, I can't offer much more than that. Any other questions? Okay, well, you know, I'm going to be here all morning. So I hope to be able to share more of the time with you one-on-one or in groups. Thank you so much for being here.
Say thank you again to the mayor for taking time to be with us this morning. It's always good to hear his views on our advisory board system. And I'm going to talk a little bit today just about some advisory board basics. I think that many of you who have been with the town for a while probably are familiar with some of this information. And if you are new and you've been to an orientation session, you may have seen some of these slides as well. But the reason we keep talking about them over and over again is because they really are the backbone of how we work. And even though you may be sitting there thinking, Jennifer, you've told us this like 10 times, but really these are the places where we find we have problems. As we go forward, all of a sudden we'll find out that, you know, a meeting happened and nobody noticed it, or board members are confused about voting protocol and so on. So I'm going to try and run through these. I'm not going to take a lot of time with them because I know that you've seen many of them before, and then we'll take some questions at the end. If there's anything that has been unclear, you've been wondering about how it works or what it means, we can do that. Yes, we'll put everything online. We're trying to save on paper, so today we printed you the things we felt you really needed to have to be a part of the session, and the presentations will all be available with the video, actually, online probably by the end of next week. So today we're going to talk a little bit just about the purpose and the structure of our boards, kind of what happens at the meeting, what you need to know in order to have your meeting run well. And as the mayor mentioned, I'm going to talk a little bit about the year ahead, because we are continuing to work on improving and implementing our new advisory board structure, and there's a lot of work that we're going to be doing and that we're going to need your help to do. So our purpose of advisory boards is really pretty basic. So we're really asking you to help with providing council with the information they need to make good decisions. And that is really the primary reason that we have you. There are so many decisions that come before our council that are very complicated, and it's challenging for them to go out and talk individually to all 57,000 residents of Chapel Hill. And you all are here to help represent a cross-section of the community so that they can be hearing those viewpoints and taking them into consideration as they're making decisions. So that is really important. And that kind of feeds right into the second point, which is that we are so excited that you have volunteered to serve on the board and to share your thoughts and opinions, but we don't want you to only share your thoughts and opinions. We want you to be out there. We want you to be talking to your community, talking to your neighbors, hearing what they have to say about different issues, because we're kind of looking to you as community leaders to help us really reach that broader public and keep them informed. I'm sure you've all been in the situation of being out maybe at a block party or a neighborhood gathering, and you might be really interested in something that was happening. Maybe it was Ephesus Fordham, maybe it was something else, and you'll find that many of our neighbors haven't really heard about those projects, or they don't really know what they are, what the impact of them is. And that's where, again, we're looking to you to go out there, to be sharing these different initiatives, to be hearing what the public says, and be sharing them with us. You also provide the public with more opportunities to come and talk about these issues. So whether you're on the Transportation and Connectivity Advisory Board or you're on Public Art, it's another opportunity for the public to come and to share with us what they're thinking about, what's at the top of their minds. Because I think that one thing I've always really liked about Chapel Hill is I feel like we are a very responsive community. We really try to respond to what our citizens are asking of us. I think that's my time with the town started when we did 2020, and that was something that I really saw throughout that process, that we had so many people coming and that the town was really trying to build this new comprehensive plan and incorporate all of those ideas and opinions. So we're really interested in doing that and offering as many opportunities for the public to come and participate as possible. to share this reporting structure with you because we feel it again reinforces just how important you are to the process. You can see that in terms of who reports to the council, there's really only three groups, right? So we have the town attorney, who is one of the only people that the council hires and manages, and then we have the town manager, and we have advisory boards. So you three groups are the ones that have your direct lines to council. You're the ones who have the opportunity to share with them everything that you think. For example, I'm not able to do that. My process is slightly different. So I share my thoughts with the town manager, and then if he feels that it's important to share with the council, he will. But with you all, you have that direct line, and that's a very valuable place to be. So we try to be clear with people when we are recruiting them for advisory boards and when you get appointed that really what we're asking of you is very straightforward. It can seem complicated sometimes, but it's really not. We want you to prepare, and in order to do that, we try to give you the materials at least a week in advance. We want you to show up. It's really important that you attend your meetings. We've had some boards in the past that have really struggled with this, that they just don't always get enough people to turn up to have a quorum. And if there's no quorum, we can't have a meeting, you can't do the work of the board. And that's really challenging for us because council created you because they think you're important. So we need you to know that you're important and attend the meetings. We want you to participate. This goes back to that whole opinion and feedback. We are looking for people who are there to have an engaged and informed discussion. So we hope that that's what you'll be able to do. We expect you to be fair, objective, and polite. And I think this goes back to what the mayor was talking about, you know, that you all are public officials. And, you know, the way that you engage with the public really sets the tone for them about the whole government of Chapel Hill. And I think that's sometimes surprising to advisory board members. I often hear people saying, well, I'm not really part of the government of Chapel Hill, but you are, and we're so glad that you are. You're a part of our whole public-facing arm. And then finally, we ask that you follow through with whatever you have said that you're going to do, or if you have something that needs to be brought back to council, we ask that you close that loop for us. We kind of take it one step farther because we know that in Chapel Hill, most folks are pretty high achievers, so it's not enough just to be a member of a board, but you guys really want to be effective members. So we just have some guidance for what we think is an effective member, and it has to do with, you know, recognizing that serving the public is the number one priority. So no matter what your own personal views are, just being sure that you're always able to do that. To understand that really you're operating as a body, so authority to the board is granted to the board and not to individuals. And I think that's really important. I know that with the council, we often say that each council member may have individual views, but it takes five votes to get something done. So that's kind of where we are with the board as well. That is important to remember that the authority that you've been given is to the board. We think that effective members recognize that compromise is important. And this really goes hand in hand with the council's view of the advisory boards, as best as I understand it. And you know, the mayor can always jump in and talk more about this, but one of their real interests in reorganizing some of these boards was to encourage more conversations about trade-offs, and trade-offs are about compromise. So I think that that's a really important point for us all to be thinking about. You know, we're also asking that you don't let your personal feelings interfere with your judgment, and that you're knowledgeable about the legislative process here in town and what issues may be affecting getting something done. So we've got a few slides here just talking about different roles on the board, and again, I'm not going to read them because I know you've seen them, but you know, we are really trying to strengthen our chairs this year. We're going to be trying to do some training with them on a quarterly basis where they come together as a group and they start to learn more about how to run an effective meeting and how to manage conflict within members, and to also kind of be thinking as a group about what they can do to help make the whole process move along more smoothly. Some of the boards will also have a champion who is seated on the Planning Commission. Again, this has to do with our restructure that we've just gone through, where our Planning Commission used to have all at-large seats, and now we have five at-large seats and four champion seats. So our champions have some extra responsibility that regular members don't have, and that is primarily that not only do they serve on the Planning Commission, but they're also meant to be very informed about the work of the board that they're representing. So we've tried to find ways to make the recommendations that you all make at your boards more a part of the planning process when the Planning Commission is having their discussion, and this is the way that we've done that this year. And this is a new system, so we're really trying it out. So we're looking forward to hearing what all of you have to say about it. Every board has a staff liaison. The staff liaisons report to the manager. So again, this is one of those places where we are kind of working together, but it can sometimes pose some challenges. So one of the things that's important to know is that the staff liaison is there to support you, but they don't work for the board. So that's why, you know, sometimes it can be challenging because the board may say, oh, we'd really like to see a report on this, or we'd really like to have this piece developed. And that becomes challenging for your staff liaison because that may be a broader scope of work than they're able to commit to without discussing their workload with their manager. So that's just something to be aware of, that they're there to support you, they're there to be a resource for you, they're there to help share with you information that may be important to your work, but their role is actually fairly limited. And one thing that we're really trying to make a change with this year is the manager has asked that staff liaisons not participate in the conversation. So in the past, we've had some boards that maybe were more advocacy tools for their department that they were attached to than we would like them to be. Because really, the feeling is that the board is, you know, your relationship is with council. So this year, we're really trying to make that change. So your staff liaisons will be sharing information with you, but they won't be participating in the same way that maybe some of them have in the past. So if you find that that's happening, don't feel like your staff liaison is, you know, giving you guys a cold shoulder or anything. That is a direct instruction from the manager, that they've been asked to really try and emulate the way he works with the council. I know that many of you have been to council meetings, and you'll see that, you know, Mr. Stansel sits up here, and he is here through the whole meeting, but he really doesn't participate in the conversation with the council. The council has their own discussion, and they come to their own conclusions, and they will ask the manager a question, and the manager will answer the question, but he doesn't actively engage them. So we're really trying to follow that model and think of you all as, you know, mini councils in a way, and your staff liaison is sort of a type of a manager. I hope that's helpful for you as you're thinking about the way that your board engages with your staff liaison. The council liaison's role, this one can be complicated at times to understand, so I've just copied what we've got in our council's procedure manual, and you can all read this more at length. It's important to note that there is not an expectation that the council liaison will attend the meetings at all if they are not able to, and I think that's something that the council is talking more about. So just a few quick things for at the meeting. The first thing is quorum. We always get a lot of questions about this. What does it mean? Why is it important? So you have to have a quorum to meet. If you don't have a quorum, you don't have a meeting. And for many boards, a quorum is one half of the appointed members plus one. But we like to be quirky. So for some of our boards, the absolute minimum quorum is defined as five. It's five if you have seven appointed members or nine appointed members. It's five. So it's important that you talk to your staff liaison and find out what quorum is for your board. And then that's what you're always working towards so that you can have a meeting. And the reason that we've placed that limit at five is that for some of the boards, like the Community Design Commission or the Planning Commission, the decisions that you're taking have a direct impact on the lives of our residents and our citizens, and it's important that we always have a sufficient number of people to hear their review or their development plan. So we're really trying to be sensitive to that. And in the case of, for example, our Board of Adjustment, the applicant can even request that they are heard by the full board. So in those cases, quorum may be 10. Okay. Just some basic meeting guidelines. Again, we're trying to improve the way that we run our meetings and make them more efficient and an effective use of your time. In the past, we've had meetings that have gone on for 5 and 6 hours, and quite frankly, that's a pretty big expectation to have of a community member and a volunteer to come here and sit from 7 until 12:30. So we're trying to change that again. We are moving a lot of our boards to meeting on Tuesday nights. We've tried to move the times a little bit earlier to start many of them at 6:30. We are trying to ask that you finish by 10:30 at the latest. So in order to do all of that, we felt like giving you guys some meeting guidelines may be helpful. And again, this is something we're going to be working on with your chairs over the next year as well, helping them think about how to structure your agendas differently or what other tools they can use to help run those meetings efficiently. Okay, voting. Again, this is one of those things that seems very straightforward, but every year we will have someone who will have voted secretly. So, and unfortunately, that invalidates whatever decision you made. So basically, there are two different ways that you can vote when you are on a board. You can either raise your hands, three. You can raise your hands to show yays and nays. You can verbally say yays and nays, or you can have a written ballot. If you have a written ballot, you must sign your name. You must. And sometimes people will say, well, we see council voting on appointments to boards, and we don't see them signing their names. They all sign their names. Believe me. Sometimes that's why you'll see me running up and down during a meeting. It's because someone's turned in a ballot, but they haven't put their name on it. So I run back up and, you know, get their signature. It's really important. It's how we record that it actually was you who took the action. And those votes are then recorded in your action minutes, and they have to be recorded by who voted and how, unless it's unanimous. That's the only exception. We can say the board unanimously said X. Okay. Again, I'm going to briefly touch on conflict of interest. So a conflict of interest occurs when a member has a separate, private, or monetary interest that's either direct or indirect in the issue under consideration. This is always kind of a tricky topic for us as a town, especially when we're looking at things like our Historic District Commission. Sometimes we will hear members say, oh, well, this person has a conflict of interest because they are a architect in town or something to that effect. And the thing is that conflicts of interest are actually more limited than people may imagine, that it really is about money. So it's thinking about, are you going to benefit financially from this, or is your immediate family, so your partner or your children, going to benefit? So if you do have a conflict of interest, what you should ask is you should ask to be recused from the vote, and you have to actually ask your board. So you say to your board, I have a conflict of interest. Here's what my conflict of interest is. I'm asking to be recused, and they need to vote to recuse you. That's very important because it impacts how your vote is counted. Then once you've been recused, you have to leave the voting area. So in the past, sometimes someone may have been recused and then they stood at the back of the room. Not okay. You have to leave. And we do the same thing with council. I don't know if you've been here at a time when a council member has had to be recused, but when they do, they leave the council chamber. So that's important. If you have a conflict of interest as well, please don't discuss, advocate, or vote on the matter. I think that's pretty clear. My best guidance to you is that when you're in doubt, ask the town attorney or ask the staff liaison to ask the town attorney. It never hurts to clarify. We are more than happy to do that. If you have any kind of a thought that maybe something is going to be a conflict, we would much rather talk about it ahead of time, because if we don't and you vote, then that's an opportunity for someone to appeal the decision. Nobody wants to be in that situation. So I would just say, please be thoughtful about what the issue is. Okay, quickly about our action minutes. Hopefully you've all become familiar with them. Just to share with you what your staff liaison is thinking about. So they have to cover the motions and the votes verbatim. They are going to link to the documents that are presented. And here's an important piece, and I say this because I found out recently that one of our boards has not been doing this, so we want to make sure that everyone is, which is that when you have your meeting, say it's in May, your minutes are written for the May meeting. Those minutes should be presented at your June meeting, and you should vote on them in June. So we don't want to have a situation where you've been meeting from September to May, and then we approve all your minutes in June. We really want you to be approving them at the very next meeting. And the reason is that they aren't the official record until you guys have voted on them. So that's really important to us. So I'm asking you to help us be accountable for that and to be sure that we are actually returning those meeting minutes to you. So if you don't see them, please ask about them. And if you don't get a satisfactory answer, or for some reason the staff liaison is saying, oh, I didn't quite get to them, then please email me, because I would like to know. Because it's really important that we are doing that, that we are taking the minutes, voting on the minutes, and posting the minutes, because that's also how the public finds out what you've been working on. And you'd be surprised, we also email those minutes out to the council. So that's also a way that the council is finding out what you're working on. So they're very important to us. Okay. The year ahead. So many of you who've been a part of this advisory board system for a while know that we've made a lot of change over the last year or so. That is change that has been bubbling for several years. I'm always being told about how these conversations began back in 2009 and 2008, and I'm sort of grateful I didn't get here till 2011, because you guys had lots of time to talk before I got here, so that was great. And we're going to keep talking. But our goal, well, the council's goal for creating that change was to try and have a better system, a system that provided volunteers with a better opportunity to serve and resulted in better recommendations for council. So that was their goal. And the council thought that one of the ways that they could do this was by changing the structure of the Planning Commission and also by considering which boards were going to really be involved in this process. I think in the past, every time a development project came into the town, a group of people sat back and they said, oh, well, what board should look at this? And they kind of started thinking about, oh, well, maybe this one or that one or the other one. And with this process now, council has said there are a set group of boards that are going to look at development review. And those boards are the Board of Adjustment, the Planning Commission, the Community Design Commission, the Historic District Commission, the Environmental Stewardship Advisory Board, the Housing Advisory Board, and the Transportation and Connectivity Advisory Board. And this is great, because council said these are the topics that we hear the most about from the public, and so this is how we're going to focus our system so that we can go back and we can engage the public on these issues, the ones that bring people to the council meetings. And that's, you know, that's not always the greatest time for people to bring up their concerns, because we're quite far along in the process at that point. So they wanted to kind of bring people in earlier, get them talking about these important issues, and then have a way for that information to be included in the recommendations that the board send to the Planning Commission, and then have another opportunity there to talk about trade-offs, so that the recommendation that finally goes to the council is one that can be very thoughtful. They can say, we're really concerned about stormwater, but we're also really concerned about affordable housing. How do we take those issues, and how do they impact each other, and what do we need to be thoughtful about? You know, if we have to build 15 affordable units, how does that impact the kind of stormwater that we need? And it just allows us to be thoughtful a little bit earlier in that process, so that when council is thinking about it, when council is working with the developers and the development community, they can be saying to them, here's what we're hearing from our community, here's what they're saying is important to them, here are the kind of trade-offs we're willing to make. So this year is really about implementing that system and testing it out, taking it for a test drive and seeing if it's working for us. So we really need you to help us figure out if it's working. So we really need all of your good feedback and your, you know, your creative thinking to help us be sure that we are heading down the right path. So I hope that over the next year, you will really be thinking about what is working for you in this process and sending us feedback about what we can do better, what we can do differently, what's working well. We're going to be trying to provide all of you with some more training over the next year to really hit those pieces that will help you to be as efficient and informed as possible. But we also need to hear from you about what those pieces are. We may have some ideas about what we think would be helpful to you, but it would be great to hear your view as well, because there may be something that you're thinking, this is all great, but I really need to know X, and it might not be something that we've thought of. So we really want you to share that information with us, and I hope that you will. And so I'll just end with saying thank you again. I think you're going to hear this a lot today. We really appreciate you and the time that you give us away from your families and your friends. And I wanted to say thank you again. So are there any questions? That's right. Could you come to the podium?
Thanks, Jennifer. This is really helpful. I don't have an organized list here, but there were a couple things that you said that I wanted to ask about. The ethical guidelines, there was some ethical guidelines that were done for advisor boards some time ago, mm-hmm. and they're rather specific, and I think they're broader than what was done for the town council. I know the town council tends to be rather narrow financial interest, direct financial conflict of interest, and that in that case the council person recuses himself. But I think when I was on the town council, I remember we did a series of ethical guidelines for advisory boards. So I'm wondering if you could send those to us and also tell us the status of them and if those are going to be relooked at.
But let me answer that part first.
Sure.
I don't know about the differences between the council's ethical guidelines and the advisory boards. I haven't compared the two documents, I'll be honest. But we just asked all of our advisory boards to sign their ethics pledge. I believe that everyone should have gotten that before they started their term. So we asked everybody to please make sure you took your oath of office and that it was notarized, and we asked you to please take your ethics pledge as well, and you should have signed that and turned it into your staff liaison. So everyone should have received those documents recently from you, from those folks. I believe that they should have come before your first meeting of this year. So if you haven't received them, please let me know. But I think that most people have, because I've been getting those forms.
Well, what would be really helpful to know, though, is to have it defined so we know what it is. Because, of course, all these things are come in kind of a gray area. I've come up against a couple instances in these recent planning things where there was a question about conflict of interest, and really nobody knew where the line was. So what I was asking you to do was to maybe email the advisor board folks the copy of the actual guidelines.
Well, they should have all... So I believe that everyone was given the ethics guidelines just recently with their ethics. It's in the ethics pledge.
Is it within the pledge then?
Yeah.
Thank you. All right.
And
great.
If there is a question that arises,
okay.
If there's another question that arises that's not, because I think the thing about conflict of interest is it's very case by case dependent. So, you know, if there is something that's occurring on your board that's giving you some pause, I would encourage you to email your staff liaison and ask them to take it to the town attorney and get an answer for you. The town attorney is always very willing to help us with those situations, and that's really our go-to person, because if there was a conflict and someone had to defend it in court, it would be our town attorney.
So I have a second question.
Mm-hmm.
The second question is,
I think you're not on the mic.
Hello.
There you go.
The second question is about the action minutes that are taken in each advisory board. And I wondered if it would be possible, and maybe you already do this, but that where it would be some page you could go to on the town website where you could see each advisory board and their last month's meeting minutes,
so
action notes.
We have that.
You do.
There's actually two places you can go.
Okay.
If the first is that we try to assign the minutes to the calendar item that has been developed, because when we send calendar item out, it should have the agenda for the meeting and hyperlinks to all the documents for the meeting. A great example of this is always to look at the Planning Commission. They do a really good job of their calendar items. After the meeting, immediately after, the staff liaison should be loading those draft minutes up to the calendar item. And then once they've been approved at the next month's meeting, they should be replaced with the official action minutes. So that's the first place you can look, is just go to the meeting. So if you know, for example, the Planning Commission meets on the first Tuesday of every month, you can go to that meeting on the calendar item, click on it, it'll open up, you'll see the full agenda and all the information there. Another page is that we have a minutes page with video for all the advisory boards. There's a link there, and you can go and choose the board you're interested in from the drop-down menu, and you can say view all past, and it'll bring up every meeting that board has ever had with a link right next to it, and you can click on it.
That's great, but I'm wondering if there's a one place to go, because it's really hard actually to move around on the website unless you're really good at it. For example, if I'm interested in the planning board, what happened in their minute? What happened in their last minute, you know, I would need to go to the planning board, right, and then click on their last minute?
No, you can either go to the calendar or you can go to the advisory boards. It's a general advisory board minutes page.
Okay, that's the link.
Yeah, so then you can just choose the...
Would you send that link to us?
Sure.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Jennifer, you may have covered this at some point, but talk about the skills expected on the advisory boards and where we can go to find a listing of what kind of skills or expertise an individual needs to bring.
Are you talking about the requirements for certain boards? Or are you talking about just generally what we would ask of any advisory board member?
No, not just generally any advisory board, but where can we find the ones, say, explicit for CDC?
Okay.
Or Parks and Rec? Or
sure. So each advisory board has its own homepage on the website. And what you can do is when you go to the website, there's a government tab. If you click on the government tab, you'll see the first thing there is council, because, again, you guys are linked to the council. And down there, you'll see standing advisory boards. If you click on that, and then you'll see a list of all of our standing boards, which is what you all are on. It lists each one there, and if you click on it, then it'll come up, and it'll tell you who is on that board. So it'll say Transportation and Connectivity Board. There are 9 seats. Here are the people that are currently serving in them. Here's the seat category that they're in, and here are the requirements for that committee. So it's all on the website. Additionally, another place to look for it is we have been creating a new membership policy that the council approved in March of last year, and that includes the membership details for all of the new advisory boards. As we kind of continue our review and have looked at the memberships of the other boards, and they've been finalized, then they will also move into that membership policy. But right now you'll find the new boards in there.
Very specific. Is voting allowed by email on any of the boards?
Thank you for asking that question. So I didn't mention this, but the town has a policy that you must be physically present at the meeting to participate. So if you are not physically present at the meeting, you are not counted for quorum, you cannot participate in the conversation, you may not vote. You must be physically present. When Trey Allen speaks a little bit later about open meetings, that is not technically the law. The law is a little bit more vague than that, but the town attorney has said that that's what he recommended to the council, and council adopted that in their membership policy. So in the membership policy, it very clearly states that you must be physically present. We know that can be challenging for people. We know lots of folks have travel schedules that take them away, but that's what the council has asked of their advisory board members, so that's the current position.
Hi, I'm Natalie Amaral. I'm chair of the library board. We're at what you might call one of the sort of second-tier boards, I guess. And we don't really have a lot of authorities. So what we're struggling with, and I'm sure some of the other second-tier boards are too, is that, in fact, we are quite dependent on the staff liaison, and yet the message coming down to the liaisons is that that we can't ask too much of them and that they can't give us too much. So for us to do our job with the town council, there's an information gap that appears to be there or being created because of this new stance. I'm just curious about whether we're going to get to talk about that so that we have some grist, right? As a board?
So I think the library board is a little unusual. So they've been around since like 1953. And I think that the, the correct term is escaping me, but you know, their rules of procedure and their bylaws have been around since 1953. So much has changed in the way the government works and the way that the town is working and the way the town is thinking about itself and its library, that I think that's causing us some challenges. So I think that probably that's one of the things we're going to have to work on. We've been working on it a lot with the development review boards, and I think that the changes we've made have been very helpful to how those boards work and how they engage with staff and how they engage with the council. And so I hope that we'll be able to go through a similar process with our cultural advisory boards as well. We don't have a timeline for exactly how that's going to happen yet, but I definitely look forward to working with you on that, and I hope that we can be engaged partners as we go forward and try and find something that's going to work very well for the board and the council and the town. I'm sorry, I can't be more specific at this time. Would the mayor, would you like to speak to that at all anymore? Or you're good? Okay. Any other questions? Okay, great. Well, you guys have been such a good audience so far. I thought this might be a good time for us to take a little break. You're probably needing some water, and the coffee is, like, alluringly just outside the door. So please help yourselves, and we'll see you back here at 10:30. And we'll see you back.